Chapter 9. After departing K-Max Base and the Canyon City, Akreen spent an hour wandering around the Urtesh, reacquainting himself with its passages and decks, chambers and drop holds, berth carrels and equipping stations. The austere dark blue bulkheads of the soldier quarters and the subtler moss greens of the command section, the gloom of Tevashir's bridge and the pale glows from the hooded operator screens, the brassy gleam of ornamental fittings, console controls, and the relief profiles of heroic Zavri ancestors decorating the walls. Although the movement of task armies around the war cage from hold worlds to affray worlds usually took place via the gates, the Urtesh had the capacity to transport a full company of Zavri, mechanized if necessary. The berth carrels could accommodate 150 fighters, while the main drop hold was big enough for 6 heavy vehicles or 10 light, or whatever combination was called for. The generals of the senior task armies were assigned small interplanetary craft in recognition of their position and prestige. But only the loyal 7 were accorded the honour of a craft like the Urtesh. As he strolled up the inclined passage leading to the bridge, Akreen ticked them off in his mind. The Avang, the Inich, the Sujalka, the Kregrin, the Lozavel, the Murrenzir, and the Zavri.
Ah, the Kregrin. Never was a gang of uncivilized marauders promoted so far beyond their talents.
Toe. The Murrenzir were once the epitome of combat perfection, but the recent generations are lesser breeds.
Ka. The arguments were so well worn that for Akreen they were like background murmurs, empty of meaning or content. Some of his precursor's commentaries had become so rote that they were like recordings, word-for-word repetitions that sometimes rambled on for long periods. Akreen used to think that the patterns of his precursors were fixed and limited, no matter how elaborate they were occasionally. But with the passing years, he had realised that there had to be more to them than that, going by the pointed and specific remarks which sporadically shook him out of his easy disregard. And whenever those remarks came from Gredaz, rare as they were, they had proved to be significant. The sloping walkway led through an arch and onto the bridge of the Urtesh. Zavri operators sat at hooded screens, faces bright from the displays, contrasting with the subdued lighting. Few heads turned. A bridge guard, one of the 3 short, hunched toolbearers standing at the wide master console, and Tevashir, first blade.
Your appearance is timely, second.
I was about to comm you to attend me.
Tevashir beckoned Akreen over to a recessed wall display behind the master console.
We have been in contact with the Harvest Flotilla. The planet Grelk has already been exchanged for a newly harvested world. That was nearly 20 hours ago. And the flotilla is in the closing stages of the second reciprocation. However, they have reported some unusual activity on the surface of the second harvested world. So I want you to take the Urtesh's scout craft, fly to the flotilla location, and investigate. The intercept course is already set in its crystals, so you'll be leaving immediately. While you are pursuing that, I shall take the Urtesh to Krelk and track down that murderous vermin Gabrozen Mav.
Tevashir wore a grim smile, and Akreen could only nod.
May I take my Shuriga scout? He said. She has proved useful in unusual situations.
Only yourself, second.
Such crucial matters are for our consideration only. We are engaged in vital tasks, blessed by the Shuska lords. Now go. With all alacrity first. Eternal loyalty. Loyalty eternal, second.
With that, Akreen hurried from the bridge. While it would have been deeply satisfying to have joined the first blade in the hunt for Gabrozen Mav, being assigned a ship mission out with the war cage was still a considerable privilege. He tried to look upon it in that context, but he couldn't avoid feeling a thin trickle of disappointment.
With a vigorous pace, he made his way down through two decks, from subdued greens to dark blues, then the ash grey of maintenance, as he turned along a linking passage that led past storage cabinets, a well-remembered shortcut to holds. It was shadowy, proximity lighting winking on at his approach, blooming from the ceiling domes, and they were slow and blurry. Onward, the smoky figures shuffled. A Kreen shuffled with them, unable to make out their faces, but aware that they were all following another who led them through a murky, high-walled maze. Suddenly, he was in bright light in the main holds corridor, standing not far from the automatic doors to the launch bay. His sense of balance felt distorted, and he swayed on the spot. Something like panic shivered through him, something cold and sharp. What had just happened? He made himself move forward. The doors parted, and he stepped through into the comparative gloom of the anteroom to the launch bay.
Ah, Second Blade, you're here. Bridge was concerned.
On his right, the technicia, a cowled tool-bearer, regarded him from just inside the narrow control cabin that overlooked the bay.
I was delayed, Akreen said. A small matter, no significance.
The tool-bearer nodded.
Are you ready to embark, Second Blade?
I am. Proceed.
But am I ready? The big pressure doors rolled apart, and the boarding cupola's low gate swung open. The cupola carried him over to the scout ship's gaping main airlock, into which he stepped. As the lock thudded shut behind him, he glanced at the timer embedded in his lower arm, then shook his head, realizing that there was no way to discover how long the nullout had lasted. Nullout. No Zavri remained truly unmoved when the subject of nullouts was broached. They were the first signs of perception instability, intermittent frailties of the mind which could then lead to decrentia, the irreversible loss of intrinsic traits and persona disintegration. It was a rare condition, but only because it afflicted the very old, and very few Zavri lived to very great ages. None of Akreen's precursors had lived past 417, reputedly the age at which Rajeg had opted for voluntary secession, prompted by a decrentia diagnosis. A narrow passage led forward to the pilot booth, a rounded compartment full of rebuild control panels, graceless boards moulded in a standard blue-green resin. Rebuild replacements could be made on the spot by order of steel technicians, usually tool-bearers, temporary substitutes, which invariably became permanent. As Akreen settled into the pilot couch, a row of oval displays came to life. Most showed odd graphical shapes that twisted or pulsed while lines of raw data periodically fanned into the display from the edges. Then, First Blade Tevashir appeared in one and stared at him.
May the luck of the lords be with you, Second. Eternal loyalty.
Loyalty eternal,
he said automatically, as a multiplicity of unseen systems and subsystems awoke throughout the craft. The deck, the couch, and the whole pilot booth quivered. Then there was a lurch as the bay's handler frames moved the vessel into the launch position. The booth had forward-facing viewports, but the safety shields were locked down. One of the console displays showed what was happening. The outer bay doors unsealed and slid up, releasing a cloud of tiny ice crystals. Moments later, the scout ship was speeding away from the Urtesh, with Akreen pressed back into his couch by the acceleration, feeling curiously frozen, both physically and mentally.
Perhaps the nullout was an atypical event, he thought. Some kind of anomaly, triggered by stress and continual vigilance, and with no connection to decrentia. It has been 9 days since my last reposal, after all.
Patterns on the display changed, and he heard a shift in the ship's power librations, which he knew heralded the imminent leap into hyperspace. Akreen laid his head back against the padded rest and closed his eyes. The smoky figures shuffled along in dimness, knee-deep in a pearly mist. They had a strange, luminous aura which flickered and melted into threads and wisps of drifting vapour. When he reached out to the nearest figure, he saw that his arm was the same, and opened his eyes, and immediately realised that there had been another null out. He was still in the pilot couch. Before him, the instrument said that the scout ship was now travelling in hyperspace, but he had not experienced the transit, an unmistakable effect. Then he glanced at the timer on the communication display and saw undeniable proof, a lapse of nearly 11 U-minutes, which he could not account for. He gripped the sides of the couch, feeling the onset of a new kind of fear.
"Space is no place for a warrior of the Zavri. We brace ourselves against the solid ground of worlds. We rush onto the field of battle. We seize the enemy's territory and bury him in it."
Toh. It was Togol, his fifth precursor, offspring of Drolm, parent to Kusks. The relief he felt on hearing the crusty old boar was absurd. "Togol," he said in his thoughts, "what was I doing since we left the Urtesh?" This would be hard for any of his precursors to answer. To them, time was an abstract notion, fragmentary and subjective at best.
"You were leading your troops against the traitor, I believe. Splendid battle, boy, although nothing like the bouts of my day."
"Toh. I mean, after that. We all came back to the camp, and I got aboard the First Blade ship."
"Ah, the Urtesh, a fine vessel. Kalma was First Blade in my time, you know."
"Toh.
What nonsense is this? Why are you disturbing my contemplations?"
"Dr. Young Akreen's having trouble with his memories since arriving on this craft. My own memories are, of course, faultless and extensive."
"Toh.
Hm. Memory flaw, null outs, decrenture, and a wandering mind."
"Dr.
I will not stand for such insults."
"Toh.
Not you. The boy, Akreen."
"Dr. Drolm, the third of his precursors, was descended from the malign Rajeg and was parent to the insolent Zivolin. His character was petty and irritable, qualities well suited to the low-level chamber of judgment functionary that he was in life. But right now, Akreen needed him to use what wits he still had just to find out a few facts. "Esteemed Drolm, forebear of shining repute, I seek your guidance in this matter. Specifically your observations of my activity since I came aboard this vessel."
"Ah, young Akreen, your courtesy does you credit, but it would appear that the activities you speak of escaped my attention, as my thoughts were occupied by weightier concerns."
"Dr.
Of course, you could just be going mad."
"Z.
Begone, you worm."
"Dr.
Insufferable imbecile."
"Ha." Akreen shook his head. Now Zivolin and Kusks were joining in, which usually heralded a spiral of bitterness and invective. "Peerless precursors, I beseech you to lend me your invaluable counsel in this troubling situation."
"Sion Akreen, if this is a truly grave predicament, then prudence dictates that you abort this mission and return to the war cage."
Ip. Ipan, former raidmaster of the 2nd Battalion and Akreen's direct progenitor. The unanswerable truth of his words struck home. Akreen would have to alter course back to the war cage, then inform the Urtesh and First Blade Tevashir there was no other course open to him. He swiveled his couch to face the helm controls, reached out and onward they shuffled. Vaporous, faceless forms, matching them step By trudging step, he realized that they were now journeying along the foot of a vast wall, steel blue, towering, featureless, limitless. Then he was back in the scout ship, as abrupt as a flicked switch. But now he was in the passenger compartment, perched on the edge of one of the low bucket chairs, arms extended, silvery hands holding the broken pieces of a yellow disposable beaker. Akreen let the pieces fall, clicking, clattering on the deck, and sat back. The fear was like a high, tight whine thrumming at the edge of perception, a pervasive undertone that made his earlier panic seem like mere discomfort. He glanced at the timer on his arm. Nearly 7 hours had passed since that exchange with Ipan while seated up in the pilot booth. What had happened in all that time? He looked down at the broken beaker, the 7 yellow pieces, and who had been in command of his body? Leaving a ship in the hands of an autopilot is like trusting a box of numbers to write poetry. Zivalin's voice broke through his transfixed frame of mind. Clenching his fists, he made himself stand. Shrewd and artful Zivalin, he began. Have you noticed that I am no longer in the pilot's couch, and that some hours have passed since we last spoke? Of course I have. I'm dead, not stupid. Z. Did you witness my actions during that period? You misunderstand. I am aware of the gap in time, but have no memory of it. You should be asking which of us is conspicuous by his absence. Aha! I knew that our disciplinarian would eventually put in an appearance. Z. What a waste and an irritation you are. You should have died with someone's boot on your throat. Ra. And yet I lived to a corroded old age and died nowhere near a battlefield. Z. Your ignoble life concerns me not. I have spoken forth to discover when our irresolute host intends to return to the war cage and to war. Ra. Most fervent, Rajek, Akreen said in the field of his thoughts. Despite my seniority, I am bound by the commands of the First Blade. Further, I am constrained by the unique predicament in which I am caught. What is the nature of this predicament? Ra. Since coming aboard the Urtesh, there have been several intervals of which I have no memory, yet I have still been carrying out actions of some kind. Nullouts. Decrenture. Ra. Too young for it, and he does not appear to be drooling or giggling. Z. Such an impressive show of medical acumen, I stand by my judgment. Ra. By now, Akreen was on his feet and heading forward to the pilot booth. There, he paused to lean on the back of the couch as he studied the instruments. Then he pointed. Ah, see. We are in hyperspace. But the course is leading us back to the war cage, and since I know that I did not carry out these actions, I must unfortunately conclude that my body is being hijacked by one of my precursors.
An infamous accusation!
Ra.
Slanderous upstart!
Ka.
A shameful imputation!
Dr.
What proof do you have, To?
Plentiful, abundant proof, Akreen retorted, which you seem incapable of recognizing. And the gravity of it all suddenly struck him. If he could not convince his precursors that some malign presence was using him for unknown purposes, how hard would it be to convince someone like First Blade Tevashir? His precursors were still declaring their innocence with varying degrees of outrage and contempt, a strident uproar that Akreen knew would eventually subside. He could, of course, leap at the controls with the goal of altering course, but such an action would doubtless provoke an intervention by his shadowy overseer, who, if Zivalin was correct, was Gredaz, first precursor, the enigmatic presence who had almost entirely shunned Akreen throughout his life. The others had been a rambling, echoing blend of dusty memories not his own, and his inner self rebelled at the idea of any of them seizing control and blotting him out in the process. But what could he do? He had heard several stories about ill-fated Zavri whose minds became battlegrounds, where their precursors vied for dominance. Such tales usually ended with the victim succumbing to a kind of mind death, leading inexorably to physical torpidity and subsidization. He wanted desperately to fight it, but beyond those stories his knowledge was a blank. Perhaps, while the other six precursors were engaged and aware, he actually should pounce at the controls, in the hope that some recollection would remain with them. Yet, the last null-out was like having a switch in his brain turned off. Then Akreen heard a chiming sound, and saw symbols blinking on the communications panel. All of a sudden, he heard Zivalin shouting in his thoughts, urging him to answer it, even as he was already pushing past the couch to lunge at the comm panel. But cloudy grey surged at the edge of his vision, and his legs gave way. In desperation, he levered himself up to the control board with his arms, only to find that his fingers and hands were now useless and shaking. He could see details on the comm panel. See that the incoming signal was from the Urtesh, from the First Blade's own secure line. The faceless smoky figures plodded along, stooped in their gait as if from some heavy burden. The glowing mist rippled and flowed around trudging feet. Some minor compulsion made him count his marching companions, and he found they numbered six. Before him, the pilot's control board, dull green moulding with openings for panels, instruments and displays. Timers revealed another gap less than 4 hours long. Beneath him, the pilot's couch into which he was strapped. In his mind, the crawling vermin of fear and the hard-bitten resolve to master it. On the displays, reading showed that the scout was back in normal space and heading along a high-velocity trajectory. Akreen sat back in surprise. The scout was on a course that would soon intercept with the Urtesh. His shadowy overseer had altered the destination, and that comm signal, which came through before the null-out, had been from the Urtesh. He leaned forward and thumbed the comm display, but all it would show was the unavailable message. Communications disabled while the ship hurries towards the Zavri banner vessel. What perils await us? Z.
Whatever we must face, Akreen said inwardly, one thing is very clear. I am no longer fit to carry out my duties.
Without a doubt. Ip.
A correct appraisal.
Toe.
A harsh outlook in my view.
Z. There is no way to discover what Gredaz has been doing during the null-outs, and that makes me a security risk. As soon as we dock with the Urtesh, I must ask the First Blade to confine me to quarters with an armed guard.
You assume that Gredaz will allow you to even begin such action, but we will shortly find out.
Z.
It was a sharp observation. One of the scout ship's hull sensors was tracking the Urtesh, while a pilot monitor showed the approach. As the minutes passed, the command ship drew nearer and the quiet was reflected in Akreen's head, where all his precursors were uncharacteristically silent. Under autopilot, the scout manoeuvred smoothly back into the open launch bay. Akreen felt the knocks and lurches as the positioner guided the small craft into parking lockdown. Standing by the main airlock, he went over practiced lines of resignation and surrender in his thoughts, while keeping his real intentions low-key. The plan was to say nothing until he came face-to-face with Tevashir, then launch a physical attack upon him. Getting himself chained and locked in a cage would ensure that his shadowy overseer could do no further harm. Muffled thuds and clangs came through from the brightly lit launch bay as it was repressurized. At the ready light, he opened the lock, cycled through to the outer hatch where he stepped onto the embarkation platform. It deposited him before the double doors, which then parted. He had barely taken a step towards the gloomy corridor when several pairs of dark hands seized him by the arms and thrust him face down on the corridor floor. As his exterior skin form was roughly searched for personal weapons, he realised that these were not troops from any Zavri order. Instead, his glimpses revealed that they were in fact Avang Septicals, here, aboard the banner vessel of the Zavri. What upheaval of insanity had convinced the barons and counts of their ebony council that attacking the Zavri was advisable? Having relieved him of his barb dagger, the Avang hauled him to his feet and without a word rushed him along the passageway. Dark-armoured, goggle-helmed, they were heedless of the bumps and knocks Akreen suffered as they dragged him up companionways and down narrow passages. Minutes later, they arrived at the Irtesh's bridge. Avang Septicals stood over Zavri operators, still seated at their stations, with hands on their heads. But it was the figure seated in the command chair that drew Akreen's attention. Someone had turned up the overhead light source, and the still form of First Blade Tevashir shone in the illumination. Akreen's escort brought him up close to the command chair and forced him down onto his knees. At first, he was certain that Tevashir was dead, and that some grotesque spectacle had been arranged for his benefit. Then, his gaze settled upon the First Blade's rigid face, from which the living eyes quiveringly stared. Akreen felt cold horror pierce him. Tevashir's body seemed frozen. His skin-form garment looked pitted and dull, like a shell. A dim and distant memory stirred, some half-forgotten child's fable.
"Do you recognize this punishment, Second Blade?"
The voice came from behind and had a vaguely slurred, machine-processed quality. Not knowing who had spoken, Akreen just shook his head.
"It is the inexorably terminal condition caused by a weapon designed specifically for use against the Zavri. A single round penetrates that metalloid skin, delivering a range of paravirals, which alter the molecular structure of the outer layer, while others eat at the inner tissues and skeletal frame, reducing them to corroded detritus."
He could not help himself.
"But the Zavri are loyal."
"In recent times, yes. But it was not always so. During the Great Unshackling War, sizable factions of your people fought on the side of the Apparatarch. Even then, 25,000 years ago, the military prowess of the Zavri was formidable. Thus, a suitably lethal weapon was required."
A short figure emerged from the shadows, a cowled toolbearer carrying a bulky, shoulder-slung, long-barreled weapon. One of the toolbearer's instrument hands was embedded in a bulging socket in the midsection, while the other was clamped around the thick, asymmetrical barrel. It looked old, its surface tarnished, dented, and scratched, but status lights glowed around that rounded socket, and Akreen understood the message that was being sent. "Here it is, the weapon that brought your race to its knees thousands of years ago, and look, it's still in working order." But although Akreen knew of the Great Unshackling, the accompanying commentary sounded like chainer lies.
"Forgive me," he said, "but the histories I was taught said that our precursors, among whom would have been the enigmatic Gredas,
Z. The revelation made him pause only for a moment.
"They fought alongside all the other liberated species to overthrow the Apparatarch."
"They had to be persuaded,"
said the unseen speaker.
"Captured, treated, rehabilitated, given new purpose, then given new weaponry. Eventually we crushed that demon ghost's forces,
threw down its orbitals, laid waste to its fleet armies, tore open its citadels, and melted its data cores down to slag. Since then, the Zavri's loyalty to Wee Shuskar has been gratifyingly resolute and undimmed. Until now.
Kneeling before the wide-eyed, slowly dying form of Tevashir First Blade, Akreen forced himself into a state of composure. The realization was stark. Only a Shuskar lord could command the Ebony Council of the Avang to lend their soldiers in a punitive action against one of the Loyal Seven. All that remained was to discover if he was to share Tevashir's fate. Heavy footsteps approached from behind as the voice continued.
The testimonials of clandestine agents have proved beyond any shadow of doubt that your superior, First Blade Tevashir, has been collaborating with the Chainers. While you were travelling in that scout craft, it was his intention to rendezvous with the Harvest Flotilla, board the hubship, and turn it all over to a crew of malcontents and seditioners who were smuggled aboard in a backup fuel tank. However, we stole a march on Tevashir's treason, intercepted the flotilla, exposed and executed the stowaways, then dispatched the flotilla back to the war cage on a deviated course. After which, we waited for the arrival of the Urtesh, and here we are.
The speaker came into view with a lurching gait, the tall, red-clad figure of a Shuskar lord, but then Akreen saw what curled from the side of that strong-featured face under the jaw, round the back of the neck, a ribbed thing, like a tentacle or a tail, following the line of the right shoulder and down the arm, engulfing it below the elbow. Instead of a lower arm and hand, there was a bizarre organic weapon. A long-barreled artifact, thick-muzzled enough to be a beam cannon of some kind. But it had bony ridges, leathery membrane stretched over bulbous chambers, webs of thready veins, scars and lumps. It was a waxy pale brown colour, and as Akreen stared, a large bump halfway along the barrel split open, and an eye gazed at him. Not just a Shuskar lord, but one of the five paramount gun lords. The teacher cubes that educated every Zavri child provided only basic grounding in the history of the war cage, but the gun lords featured prominently throughout. They were the Shuskar researchers who, during the early stages of the struggle against the Apparatarch, found the ancient symbio weapons buried on a harvest-acquired world. Study led to dialogue, then a merging that created the five gun lords, who were able to turn a desperate rebellion into the Great Unshackling. There could be no denying their power and their right to rule all the worlds of the war cage, or the unqualified, irreducible loyalty which was their due, or the fear and awe that they inspired.
I am Exrahuld, said the gun lord softly. Do you know of me?
Akreen nodded.
The defence of Mount Krallen. The flight to Ajibha. The Lothar ambuscade.
Millennia have passed, yet the memories are as fresh as they were in the days that followed,
the Shuskar said.
And Beshefis, lord.
Beshefis too. I recall in every glittering detail.
The gunlord, Exrahuld, wore a high encircling collar fashioned to resemble crenellations, but his grin was still visible, revealing pointed teeth stained yellow.
An insurrection driven by a traitorous faction of the Order of Steel, colluding with MacLun's sect of demagogues and saboteurs, rousing to revolution the underworkers of half a dozen worlds.
Exrahuld had been standing behind the high-backed command chair in which Tevashir was slumped and slowly dying. And now he leaned forward to rest that disconcerting weapon arm on the raised back.
These were enemies that the Shuskar faced with unity and resolve. Now it is the retrocessionists, a secret coterie within our own number, against whom we must strive.
Distrust is degrading the chain of command, and suspicion spreads like a disease. Which brings me to you.
Akreen averted his gaze, inadvertently letting it settle upon the mute figure of the toolbearer, still standing with the Zavri killer gun hanging at a slant, muzzle down.
Put iron in your spine. Accept whatever judgment is laid upon you. Dra.
Most paramount lord, he said with a relaxed calm which was wholly fabricated. I cannot understand why the First Blade would break his vows, nor why he would carry out actions designed to harm the War Cage.
Really? I can come up with one good reason without trying.
Z. Zivalin's interjection almost made him stumble, but he made it look like a natural pause and carried on. As for myself, I can only point to my record of service and the numerous assaults upon the Chainers and others in which I played notable roles. The Gun Lord gave a one-sided shrug.
Tevashir's record was, is, more extensive and illustrious than yours by far. So it seemingly counts for little in matters of loyalty. However, it is worth noting that he is the bearer of two precursors, neither of whom accounted for much, whereas your own precursor lineage possesses a greater distinction and goes back to the Great Unshackling itself.
The Shuskar's smile was equal parts savage humour, anger, and calculation.
In short, we need an experienced officer to take Tevashir's place, and you appear to be well qualified. So be upstanding, Akreen, Scion of Ipan, and the new First Blade of the Zavri.
Lord, I am honoured, Akreen said as he got to his feet.
Any intention he had had of resigning his post now seemed ludicrous, not to say suicidal.
Honoured and humbled. My vow remains that of the Zavri. Eternal loyalty.
Pleasing words, First Blade, but keep in mind that there is a provision set upon your new station, as you might expect. Any sign of treachery on your part will result in punitive action being carried out against the Zavri Holdworld Drevor. As you can see, the anti-Zavri weaponry is satisfyingly effective. Ah! Finally.
In the command chair, Tevashir's head wavered slightly. His mouth opened, but only dark, glittering gravel spilt out. The staring eyes grew still and dull, then cloudy, then dark and gleaming. Exrahuld, gunlord of the Shuskar, smiled approvingly, then glanced up at Akreen, who kept his face composed and apparently untroubled.
Do we have an understanding? First Blade.
Yes, Lord. And I repeat my vow, eternal loyalty to the Shuskar, loyalty eternal.
Exrahuld smiled coldly, then straightened from his leaning position.
Very well, First Blade. You shall now speedily acquaint yourself with the duties of your new status. You will also place all units of the Zavri on a war footing, including the half-battalion you recently commanded. When you return to the War Cage, set your destination as Armag. On arrival, assume stationary orbit above the capital city and await further instructions.
Armag? Is that the Grixen Holdworld, Lord?
The same. Consult your archives and be prepared. The final chapter of the Chainer's Tale is about to be written.
With that, the Gun Lord cradled the grotesque bioweapon arm against his midriff and left, closely followed by the toolbearer with the Zavri killer. The Avang Septicals were the last to depart, with a leisurely swagger in their gait. Akreen could feel the relief of his precursors when the bridge was finally cleared of intruders. The need to act decisively was undeniable. He assembled the bridge officers and gave out a batch of directives which put into effect the orders of Exrahuld.
The removal of Tevashir's brittle, shell-like corpse was assigned to the lowest-ranking crew member, who was told to ensure that it was ejected via the refuse lock. That should satisfy any Shaskar spies among the crew. It was only sensible to assume that there was at least one, that the former First Blade's remains were being treated with the bare minimum of respect. On the bridge's main screen, a large vessel of severe, brutalist design was firing its manoeuvring thrusters, moving away from the Urtesh. It was one of the Shuskar's belligerator ships, now clearly the seat of command for Gunlord Exrahold. Akreen instructed the helm officer to wait for 10 U minutes after the belligerator's departure to hyperspace before following on. Then he decided to retire to the commander's abeyance chamber and quiz the archives on the subject of Armagh. As he descended the narrow companionway at the rear of the bridge, his precursors broke their silence.
"Such vile deceit! It will find you out!"
Toe.
"What monstrous creatures are our overlords! Yet Tevashir deserved his fate!"
Dr.
"All things that live can be killed."
Ra.
"Be ready for a pretty festival of ruin where every brute has its own death dance."
Z.
"Restraint is key. Bide your time."
Ka.
"Those half-beasts, degenerates and brigands, must never be allowed to set foot on Dravol. Never!"
Ip. As the door of the abeyance chamber, so recently Tevashir's, slid open, Akreen tried to think of something to add to the babble of declarations. But as the door closed behind him, the babble faded away to just one voice, which only laughed quietly for a moment before... Again, he was in the misty gloom, in the lee of that vast featureless wall, with a single smoky figure standing nearby. The stranger turned and approached, his face a real face, silvery and craggy, and vaguely familiar from the lineage archives.
"Hello, Akreen," he said. "I am Gredaz. I thought it was time we had a little chat."